It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our sense of smell can tell us what's for dinner when we walk in the front door or bring us back to our fondest childhood memories. But how much do we know about the nose? Well, a couple of University of Pittsburgh researchers have received a $6.4 million three-year grant to study the olfactory system in both humans and animals. I'm joined now in studio by Nathan Urban. He is professor of neurobiology at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Nathan Urban, good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
And also with us is Bard Ehrmantraut, a professor of mathematics at Pitt. Bard Ehrmantraut, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello.
And I'll ask you to just kind of pull that microphone up towards you a little bit. There we go. Say hello, Bard.
Hello.
Okay. What got you onto this kind of research?
Well, so it's been something that we've been doing in my lab for about the last 12 or 13 years. And it really started with both an interest in the sense of smell and also an interest in some of the brain circuitry that underlies our sense of smell. It's a great system for studying how it is that brains receive information, how it is they transform stimuli that are out there in the world.
And explain the link between scent, localization, and the internal systems that control the nose.
So this particular grant is really about the localization of odors in the environment. And it's a really difficult problem. So in some ways, there's an interesting analogy. So when the debris from the Malaysian Airlines flight started washing up on Reunion Island, people began to wonder, well, how can we use that to figure out where the plane is? And in some ways, this is something we do all the time with our nose, with our sense of smell. We detect things at some distance that is being transmitted to us, you know, over a long distance via a very turbulent flow. And this is something that our biological systems can solve. And so we're interested in this both from the biology side, but also from the mathematics and the sort of computational side. And that's Bard's specialty.
Right. And so Bard, explain this.
So explain, well, I mean, I got into olfaction.
Oh, okay, wait, we've got this microphone over here. All right.
Okay. Sorry.
Not your fault. We were playing a little microphone roulette there, but right. Got you.
So I actually been into olfaction longer than Nathan in some sense because I worked on slug, Lemax olfaction many years ago. But now with Nathan, I got into it from a different point of view with we were interested in things like oscillations and synchronization. And then we had a student last summer that was working. we had a student, an undergrad student, working with us in the lab, who and Nathan had some nice experimental setup for how mice find trails and things like that. And this kid was a computational guy, and he was interested in modeling it. And I had done a lot of work on ant trail following by ants and things like this, and it seemed like a great example to continue a collaboration. And so we were interested in what mechanisms an ant or a mouse in this case could use to track odors. And if you think about the problem, they're able to do this with one way we can localize sound, for example, is most of us have two working ears, and so the differences in timing from one ear to another allow us to localize sound. So there's some ideas that differences in the concentration of odors in the two different nostrils or nares, as they say in biology, can give us some hints too. But animals do quite well with just one nostril blocked. So we were trying to come up with some algorithms for how animals can go from, you know, not finding odors to finding odors. And the kinds of things that we're looking at least that Nathan and I look at is a little easier than the more general question of localizing, say, a source at a distance where there's wind and things like this. But there, animals use other clues like wind direction and things like that. So My job here is to come up with mechanisms and come up with algorithms, which Nathan and other people in our group can test by doing experiments in neurophysiology.
It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about research being done at the University of Pittsburgh, studying how both humans and animals use their sense of smell. And one of the things that I find particularly fascinating is how animals have such a more finely tuned sense of smell than humans do. Do we know exactly why that is, gentlemen?
I think there are a couple of reasons that people give. One is that it turns out that animals have, in general, more proteins that are devoted to the sense of smell. So animals in the across the animal kingdom have proteins that are expressed by cells in their nose, and these are the things that actually bind to and detect the odors that are in the air. The scent of coffee, a bunch of chemicals that are from the coffee that end up in your nose. Humans have about 400 genes that encode these proteins. Dogs have probably about 800 or so. And other animals like rodents, rats, and mice have maybe 1,200 or so proteins. So
is that why dogs are sniffing everything? I take care of a dog in my neighborhood for some people that I live near. And when I take that dog out, he's a husky. And, I mean, man, he's standing at one spot sniffing, and I'm thinking, what is he getting out of this? But obviously he's getting more out of it than I would if I got down on all fours and started sniffing at the same spot.
Absolutely. So animals the sense of smell can be very, very important to animals, both for, you know, detecting prey, also detecting predators, detecting each other. And so, especially for dogs, the sense of smell is a very important part of their overall life, how it is that they interact with the world.
I mean, I have two dogs, and they're low dogs, which makes it a lot worse than your problem because their noses are never more than a few centimeters from the ground.
And so have we explained exactly how the brain processes this information that it receives from the nose?
We really haven't. I mean, we have some ideas as to the cues that are used, like this left versus right difference, being able to detect that the smell is stronger now than it was before. So that's where we are. We know some of the cues, but we really have no idea, once that information gets in the brain, where is that left-right comparison made? Or where is the comparison between this sniff and the last sniff made? Those are complete mysteries. And that's some of the work that is supported under this grant, is to try and identify not just what the cues are, but where in the brain are these computations taking place.
And how these computations are done. I mean, once we figure out what the circuitry is, we can ask whether the circuitry is sufficient to make the distinction between whether it's stronger before or stronger after. Other questions are, if you go from one sniff to the next, how does the animal maintain the sort of memory of what that previous sniff was long enough to make the comparison to the previous one?
And what will the research money that you've received go towards studying?
So it'll go towards studying exactly these things. So part of it is to do experiments looking at the behavior of animals, to very carefully measure what they're doing, when they're doing it, when they're sniffing, and to try and effectively decode the algorithm that they're using to solve this problem. And then another portion is to try to use techniques to look into the brains of these animals and try to determine, you know, where are these calculations happening, what are the calculations doing. And ultimately, the proof is in the pudding. So we would like to be able to propose how it is that you could actually make devices that do this. Yeah. Because right now, if you want to detect a chemical in the environment, you want to detect a truffle, you don't have a truffle finder. You don't have a metal detector-like device for truffles. You have a dog or you have a pig. And it's remarkable to us that the state of the art with respect to detection and identification of localization of these chemicals is still to use animals. It's really we're remarkably primitive in this regard.
13th century technology.
Right. Well, it goes back to, you know, you think about the old Sherlock Holmes movies where they got the bloodhounds out there, and that's still what they're using today.
Absolutely. We have nothing better.
Yep. And it's interesting because we do have technology now to detect odors, e-noses and things like that. And that's really not the rate limiting thing. The question is how to find a source of something in a really noisy very complex environment, and to focus on that particular thing and not get distracted and figure out algorithms for cleaning the signal, reducing what we call the increasing what we call the signal to noise ratio and things like that, reducing the disorder, reducing our lack of knowledge of it somehow. So there's mechanisms to do that. There's mathematical theories around this, and the question is, how can we apply these and use these in this localization problem?
And, you know, people spend a lot of time engaging in any number of surgeries which really aren't necessary. Would there someday, you know, one of the ways in which we have been allowed to see better in our older age is the LASIK surgery that is done on the eye. Could something be done for the human nose that makes it as sensitive and powerful as an animal's nose?
Well, so it's interesting.
Tell me you're looking into this.
We not directly. There's a lot of interest in the fact that the sense of smell seems to diminish early on in certain diseases. So Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, neurodegenerative diseases overall.
Right.
There's one early sign can be a loss of olfactory sensitivity. Now, how is it that you would take your, you know, perfectly functional nose and make it better? Well, to some extent, you'd have to introduce these genes that maybe some of the genes that dogs have that we don't. You know, that would be a science fiction experiment at this point. But there are
why
a lot,
not?
I want them.
Bart wants to be able to smell as well as his dogs.
I just want to be able to smell as well as I did 8 months ago. I lost my sense of smell in April.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened?
Cold.
And they say that it impacts your sense of taste.
Yeah.
The what we call flavor is a combination of taste from the tongue and smell through the nose. And a lot of what we call flavor is based on our nose, dependent on our nose. There are a lot of great examples of this. But
didn't your mom ever ask you to hold your nose when you had to take medicine or eat broccoli?
I think I just did it on my own. But
and you don't taste it. You get the sour and the sweet and the salty, but you don't get the taste, the flavor.
Right. And the nose is also an important indicator of a person's overall health. You know, we certainly do that with dogs. You know, you feel a dog's nose if it's cold. You know, boy, he's or she is really healthy. But it's an important indicator of a person's overall health. How so?
Well, so there are these disorders which seem to affect our sense of smell, the brain disorders, neurodegenerative disorders. But there's also certainly restrictions of the airway, of the entry of odors into the nose in the context of colds and other kinds of inflammation can certainly be a problem that is an indicator of something about your overall health. But for us, for me at least, the more interesting examples are these cases where there's some disorder, a brain disorder, which is affecting sense of smell, because that might give us some insight into the fact that this is an early sign, an early symptom, might give us some insight into some of the early processes that are involved in those disorders.
And anything else that in the last 30 seconds that you're ultimately hoping to do, and I'll take science fiction out of the equation.
Well, it's still pretty science fiction, but I think the idea that we could have a device that is able to track and localize the source of an odor, whether that's a landmine. Right now we're doing this. There was a Nicholas Kristof piece in the Times about hooded rats or pouched rats this in Angola. You know, building devices to do those kinds of things, I think, while it's somewhat science fiction, is still something that I think we can contribute to.
It's fascinating stuff. We've been talking about work done by a couple of University of Pittsburgh researchers into studying the olfactory system in both humans and animals, and I've been joined by Nathan Urban, professor of neurobiology at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, and also Bart Ehrmantraut, a professor of mathematics at Pitt. Gentlemen, thanks to you both for being here. It was a fascinating discussion.
Thanks. It was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to our website and revisit past segments at wesa.fm. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.